Good morning. It's 9:06. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Well, it's hard to miss. Every day we hear news of a drought, a flood, a heat wave, a dangerous fire, a series of powerful storms, all out of proportion to what we might expect from Mother Nature. Not isolated incidents either, and the violent nature of these weather events is escalating. The cause? Climate change. According to my guest, the president and CEO of a group called the Climate Reality Project, Maggie L. Fox. She joins me by phone. Good morning, and welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, John, and thank you so much for the invitation.
We're seeing examples of extreme weather events all over the world. The United States has just seen the worst tornado season in 60 years, for example, and we've experienced quite a few more severe thunderstorms here in Wisconsin than we would normally get. Huge fires in Arizona. Are droughts in the southern part of the United States, are these weather events signs of global changes in the climate?
It sure looks like it, John. The extreme weather events that we've been experiencing in the United States and the states that you named and many others, Texas is having an extreme 50-some days of over 100-degree weather, Savannah, Georgia. It's quite extraordinary, really. And it's not just the United States, it's all over the world. And just in the last year and a half, the number and the severity and the frequency of extreme weather events all over the globe is waking us up. You know, we're starting to pay attention, and I think that's a really good thing.
Well, when you say we, who do you mean?
Well, you know, my organization, the Climate Reality Project, founded by former Vice President Al Gore, we've been working on climate for a number of years now. When I say we are in the midst of a campaign to actually work with people to help look around and ask questions and discover the reality of this new normal, these changes that are occurring in our climate. They've been coming for quite a while. They've just reached a level of significance and severity that they are waking people up, and conversations are starting really all over the world. So that's what I mean by we.
Okay. Why shouldn't we just assume, well, you know, this is part of the natural cycle here on Earth and nothing we can do about it?
Well, we can, to some extent, and we have been doing that, right? But you actually have to step back and take a look, because there have been extreme weather events in the history of the world since the beginning of time. So it's not to say that extreme weather is in of itself a sign of climate change or any single weather event. But you have to look just over the last decade. 2010 was tied for the hottest year on record. Previous hottest year on record was 2005. The last decade was the hottest decade on record. The 10 hottest years on record have all occurred since 1998. Not just in the United States, but 19 countries set temperature records in 2010. Pakistan was the hottest in one location at 128 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a number that's hard to picture, really understand. And yes, we would be having extreme weather and bad weather events and unusual weather events, as you and I and all of us have experienced in our lifetimes and our parents and our grandparents and before that. But climate change is making these kinds of extreme weather events more frequent and much more intense. And in fact, in shifting patterns where that kind of extreme weather event, as you articulated in the first part of your conversation, are happening in places and in ways that no one's ever experienced. Think of Nashville, Tennessee, last spring with a flood in parts of the city that actually wiped out homes and businesses that had no flood insurance because there had never been a flood there and there was no projection of any kind of flooding in that part of Nashville, all from rainstorms. That's extreme, and that's different, and by scientists are calling it a new. It's not a normal that's going to be easy to adjust to, but it does appear to be our new normal.
And calling something the new normal implies acceptance.
It does, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I don't know why, but that bothers me a little bit.
How so?
Well, I mean, well, just tough it out. So what? It seems to me that, we always expect scientists to not just say, well, deal with it. This is what's going to happen. We expect scientists to say, okay, here's what's happening. But good news, everybody. We have figured out a way to fix this. I guess that's the uncomfortable part. And I think for many people, because we have, for whatever reason, we have, as a culture, placed quite a bit of faith in the ingenuity of man and our ability to, okay, we caused some problems, but we also know how to fix them. And there's a magic pill for this somewhere.
I think we all share in that. We have reached a moment when open denial of the climate change that's been occurring for many years and is now increasing in rate of change, particularly in reaction to extreme weather events, has become our way. A lot of groups are manipulating and disregarding the facts, which I think has led us to a place we aren't collectively working together to do exactly what you said. There's no question that we can reach clarity that the climate is changing and come together as a country and as a society to address the solution. Your own state of Wisconsin is 13th, as I understand it, in the country, ranked in clean energy jobs with a big focus on new kinds of batteries, biofuels, and water technology. It's not that we can't do something about this. It's that we've chosen not to do that. And we have to change that. And we have to change it pretty quickly.
Because
amount of carbon pollution that we've been dumping into the atmosphere, 90 million tons a day, heat-trapping gases, has changed our climate. And we actually have to stop doing that. Will it stop some of these changes from happening? No, but it certainly can make a difference in our lives and in our future. So if the term near normal says to you that we're not going to do anything, I would agree with you. That would make me deeply uncomfortable, and we can't do that. But if the term new normal reflects that the climate has changed and is continuing to change, then I think it's accurate. That it means that we don't have work to do and that we aren't, fact, past time for us to come together and reach solutions to make a difference about this.
Well, that leads me to the next question, which is, what is the Climate Reality Project?
Well, thank you for asking. Well, we are an organization, as I said, founded by Vice President Gore, looking around the world just as you are, looking around your own state, looking around the United States, looking around the world. You can see the big shifts in weather. That's something that anyone and everyone is experiencing, some people quite personally in their lives, if they've been in Joplin, Missouri, or if they were living in the Midwest this past spring, or even if they're in Texas right now, where there have been just an extraordinary number of days of 100-degree weather. There are costs to those weather changes. And so we created the Climate Reality Project to come together and ask people to talk about this and begin a conversation about what it means when these kind of extreme weather events are happening much more frequently. Our first event will be in September 14th and 15th. We're calling it 24 Hours of Reality. We will begin in Mexico City at 7 p.m. and move around the globe in multiple languages, 24 time zones, trying to bring the world together and have in each of those countries individuals telling stories about what the extreme weather events are in their country, asking questions, sharing stories, to reveal the full scope and impact of the change that's happening. This will be the first in a series of quarterly events that we hope will bring people together in a way that will help us turn and do what you said, except that if this new normal is on its way, that we don't want to actually sit back and be passive about it. We want to take action, and we know that there are solutions all around us. We use energy in very inefficient ways, and we really don't have to do that. We simply don't have to do that. We can make those changes together. But first, we actually have to accept that climate change is happening and will continue to happen, and we have to come together to do something about it. our first event will be live streamed fully for 24 hours. I'm going to have to rest up to stay awake that whole time. It will, as I said, start in Mexico City and culminate in a final presentation by Vice President Gore in New York City. People can sign up and join us by going on to their website and typing in climaterealityproject.org. We hope people will do that and join us and really create a global conversation about these changing weather events and what we can do about it.
It's almost too easy to just say, well, you talk about a decade here and a decade there, but in geologic terms, those are like nanoseconds. The Earth's been around for billions of years, and so what if something happened over 10 years? What does that really mean?
Well, actually, in geologic terms, you're absolutely correct, and that is why climate scientists, even though they have every national academy of science in the world, and 98% of climate scientists have been speaking about climate change they've been very careful about extreme weather events, and they've been very careful at looking at, you know, pockets of time like a decade. But the rate of change is moving so much faster now. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is actually about to release a study which will link why these extreme weather events are precursors of the shifts that have occurred in climate, and that even though we are looking at decadal shifts, that these shifts are so dramatic and of such significance, they actually are something we have to pay attention to. You're right, but humankind, in geologic terms, is only one piece. So there are people who take the view that this is just what's going to happen to the planet. And maybe they're right. But there's a lot of human suffering on its way if we sit back and simply continue to use fossil fuels the way we've been using them. We don't have to do that. We don't actually have to heat up the planet this way. We can make different choices.
All right. I don't even have to give the phone number because people are already lining up to call, but there's still one line open. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. You can also send an email, talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. There's a Facebook page for the Kathleen Dunn program. You can also leave a comment on the wall there, and someone will put it on my screen, and I'll share it with the radio audience. We're talking about climate change, and some people would even go so far as to call it a climate crisis. All these extreme weather events that we're seeing all over the world, the pace of climate change accelerating, that setting off warning bells for a lot of folks. And the Climate Reality Project is trying to make us all more aware of that. Wondering what you think. 800-486-8655. We'll be back with more of our discussion in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:21. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up later on this afternoon on the Ideas Network. Cornell College in Iowa uses a block plan calendar, which enables students to focus on one subject at a time. After 5, join Ben Marins and his guest when they discuss a new educational concept known as One Course at a Time. That's after 5 today on At Issue with Ben Marins. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn, and in this hour we're talking about the Climate Reality Project with the president and CEO of that group, Maggie L. Fox. She joins me by phone, so do a lot of other people. Let's get some callers on the line. We'll start in Detroit and hear from Ray. Ray, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Pretty good so far, but the day is young.
And you know what? What occasion that you guys are talking about on a day in Detroit where you're in 100 degrees. So how apropos.
It's a hot one.
Yes, it is. And Maggie?
Yes. Good morning, Ray.
I have been an email person. In other words, you sent me all your stuff from your organization. I'm happy to read all that stuff and wish I could oblige in helping you guys out. But I've been working on a project for the last 10 years about energy and about the climate change, because they go hand in hand, as you know. And efficiency is much important in resolving many of the issues. But we're talking about mega efficiency. And all the different things we're doing is kind of like patching the work. And I don't know if you're, I sent you a couple of emails, and maybe it did get to you or not, about my project called Alpha Omega Project. And you can see my website at alphaomegaproject.com. And it's about bringing clean energy 100% to the environment in the terawatt range, which is at the range that our power plants are growing at. But at the same time, being a systems engineer and a manufacturing engineer on improving processes, I'm designing the structure to where you're getting 20 to 50% better fuel economy on every vehicle on the interstate highway.
Sounds really impressive, actually. Right. In many ways, both John and Ray, this conversation is just what we want to have happen. There are so many people all over the world who have are doing the kind of things that Ray is doing, trying to figure out how to fix this problem. So the new normal that gives John pause is not something we have to accept, but something we can change. That's the purpose of the Climate Reality Project. That's the purpose of those emails we send you. And thank you, Ray, for reading them. And I will take a look at your project. I apologize that I haven't done that yet. But you're right. We are looking at a changing the way we produce and use all forms of energy, and creating not just efficiency, which is first. We have to be more efficient. It's foolish and silly to waste energy the way we do. It's expensive and unnecessary. But we also are going to have some big-scale solutions. You're right about that. And we can't really get that going until we get this conversation happening in a much broader way all around the world. So thank you for what you're doing. I'll take a look, and thank you for calling this morning.
Ray, thanks for the call. We also had a call from Doug in Chicago who couldn't stay on the phone, but he had a couple of things on his mind this morning. He said, what would it take for America to get like the United Kingdom, which has cars that get 80 to 90 miles per gallon, and what would it take for America to get like Germany, which has 70 to 80% of their houses with subsidized solar panels on the roofs? I wasn't aware of either of those two things, but things are happening elsewhere in the world. Is the United States ahead, behind? How do we shape up?
We're behind. It's not a good thing. I hate to say that, but there are a lot of great people in this country, and there are a lot of really innovative solutions, and there are good things happening in your state. I mentioned earlier, the administration is proposing 56 mile per gallon requirements for new vehicles, and there's, I see in the press, lots of pushback against it, where there are cars in the rest of the world reaching those numbers and going higher. That's what this conversation is about. What is it going to take to do this? It's going to take political will. What is political will? It's when people reach clarity in this country that they know change is needed, and they get up and stand behind it. So I agree with both these callers. We can do this. We just have to decide to do it, and it's conversations like this that are going to help make it happen, I hope. It's not for lack of the entrepreneurship and the opportunity to make this shift. We can do this.
Okay. Well, this is our morning to get calls from Detroit. Here's another one. Leon, let's take your call next. Leon, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Go ahead.
Great. Ms. Fox, one I wanted to mention about is about the youth in our schools. They have some very good ideas. I go out and speak at many schools about flight simulation and flying, and the kids talk about air and space because, you know, today the shuttle ended all of its last mission. And one of the things that the kids asked was, does it break the ozone every time the space shuttle goes up and reenters? And I said, yes. So what does that do to us? I said, it has an effect globally because we puncture our exact blanket around the globe. Mm-hmm. Now, given that setting, the environment is going to change because of sun coming into our globe, into our cities, into our homes. And the kids are saying, well, why don't we just use umbrellas? In other words, something to protect us because we're globally warming up, the global warming effect. My question to you is, as you look at clean air, the fans, how many fans have you seen around those windmills, if you will, in Detroit area, which I think would be good to help circulate some of the air and the moisture around. So as the sun does puncture and those kinds of things, plus the factories, it helps clean up the air, if you will, and yet process energy back into a city like our city, Detroit, that can use a way of cheaper or easier way of paying our energy bill. So it's something I just wanted to run past you for thought. I haven't heard you mention too much about that. If it's a way of doing an immediate correction or immediate way of doing things, which our kids live in the real world, so real action, this is something I think can be budgeted from the national level to help the cities like Detroit to survive. And that's my thought for today.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Actually, wind energy is a real possible solution for the kind of power that we need to fuel our schools and our computers and our homes. So, yes, I think you've got, I mean, we're looking at wind energy projects all across the United States. In fact, there was an important one in Wisconsin that John may know more about than I do that actually isn't happening there, but there was a 150-megawatt wind farm proposed. Isn't that true, John?
There have been a number of wind farms proposed in Wisconsin. Some have been put up, and some haven't made it out of the approval process.
But wind energy as a partial one of the areas of renewable energy that will bring solutions our way is absolutely correct. I can't speak specifically to the geography of Detroit and what the possibilities are there, but I can't imagine that it wouldn't be a very viable solution for your part of the world. The important thing of your call, not just
go
about
ahead.
Wind energy, but also about children and how wise they are and how they see the opportunity for change. It's that generation that are going to be there. And we used to think that climate change was, we were going to be visiting it on our children and our grandchildren. It's actually here today. So it's not that we used to be saying that they were going to be the ones that were going to have to solve these problems. And in fact, it's us with their help, because their fresh energy and clarity about the future is going to be very important to coming together to get this done.
Let's take a call this time from Bayview. Marie, you'll be next. Marie, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good topic. Great topic. I would love to be optimistic about this. I would just really love to be optimistic. I think that the political will is just, our Congress, most of them don't believe in climate change. How do these people get to be representatives of us? I have no idea. But they're always talking about picking winners and losers and blah, blah, blah. But the truth of the matter is, the only way we get big things done, just talked about Apollo, is by the federal government. And do you think that everybody would have a computer on their desk right now if the federal government hadn't put the seed into the whole computer idea? They needed it for military things, for other things, so of course they put a lot of money into that. Well, that was the seed money. And if, say, for instance, our military-industrial complex said, we need solar energy, we need this for this, we need that for that. For some reason or other, I think that suddenly we would find the money to do that.
First of all, let's talk about pessimism versus optimism. There are plenty of reasons, if you look at climate and the changes that are happening around the world, to pause and be pessimistic. And I think John was noting that with his reaction to new normal. The first is there's every reason to be optimistic. And yes, there are hard times right now, both economically and politically, in the United States, but that doesn't mean we haven't had hard times in our history in the past, and it doesn't mean we can't make that change forward. There are a lot of reasons to be optimistic. One of those is that there are parts of the world that are waking up and moving the kind of changes around energy use that we need, and I don't think the United States will be very far behind. But I think maybe the most important thing to note, besides seeing the glass half full, is that over history we've learned, and I certainly learned again in 2009 and 10 as I helped with many other people work on a legislative campaign that we thought would bring climate and energy legislation but did not, is that we have to remember that governments act last. Governments are the last act and not the first act. We are the first act. And the work that's going on in your state and in my state and in around this country and around the world is what's going to make the difference to make this change. When we are clear as a country that we want to address climate change, that we want to move to a 21st century energy economy, there are countless numbers of people like Ray and the children in the classroom who are past ready to do this. We just have to come together and make it clear, because the solutions, some of which we haven't discovered yet, some of which are like solar and wind, haven't reached scale. The choices are there. We just have to make them. And we have to do it together. And so thank you for calling. And just remember, the glass is half full, because those children are not going to settle for a world that is not livable. And they should.
Marie, thank you. Thank you for that call. We have, I believe, an email from Christopher in Port Wing, one of my favorite little towns in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Who says, thanks for the good program, and Christopher, you're welcome. The silver lining to the climate crisis and chaos that we are in is that this will become the biggest jobs creation element ever in our economy. We have made a good living in renewable energy for the last 23 years in northern Wisconsin. It is happening, and the political will needs to be there to move it forward quickly. It is a fantastic economy for the long run. We've been hearing a lot about green energy jobs, and we are seeing some of them. The interesting thing to me is that I'm old enough to remember being in the room when Hubert Humphrey gave a speech to a bunch of college students about how there was a tremendous economic future in the business of cleaning up the environment. That would have been about 1972. We're still seeing it, and we're still hearing about it now. The green economy is coming. The green economy is coming. When's it going to get here?
Well, first, thanks for Christopher's note, and I had a big smile when he was talking about the number of jobs that were possible by moving to a clean energy economy. There was a recent Union of Concerned Scientists report that came out that noted that the Midwestern states would add about 87,500 jobs by 2030 if all the Midwestern states implemented a series of policies that were advocated by the Midwestern Governors Association during an energy summit nearly 4 years ago. The report was called A Bright Future for the Heartland, and it used examples of a 30% renewable electricity standard for Midwestern states by 2030, aggressive energy efficiency policies, et cetera. But the key is the number of jobs that would be created. At a time when we are in a global economic transition and there is a shift to what will be a new economy, not just in the United States but in the globe, but to your point, John, when will it come? I think it's coming, and I don't think it's a we have to choose this. First, there are a number of first reasons. One, the shifting climate, but co-equal to that, even if the climate wasn't shifting, our economy is shifting, and we actually have to choose a new way of the jobs that have been lost in the last few years have to be replaced. And with what? When you look across the spectrum of opportunity, a clean energy economy is one of the richest areas where that new jobs economy will come from. So I hope the answer to your question is, I think the answer to your question must be now. Thank you, Hubert Humphrey, but the time is now.
Okay. Well, Hubert was a real hero of mine back in 72. Let's go to Lori in Franklin next. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning. I love this show. I'm wondering if you can give an opinion about fracking. Frontline, I think it was, showed a film called, now I can't think of the name of it. It was about fracking, and it's about fracturing shale, using lots and lots of water and chemicals to release natural gas. And there, I was just shocked to learn. Oh, Gasland, that was the name of the film. And I was just shocked to learn how many installations there were already, and people were so glad to have their land bought up because they weren't making a great living off of it, and then all of a sudden, horrific things started to happen with health, human health and animal health and the water quality and air quality. Have you something to say about that? And also about the regulation of such things.
And by the way, Maggie, before you respond to that,
under staff and under fund regulatory agencies in this country. That's my opinion.
May, thanks, Lori. Maggie, before you respond to that, I want to say this. We are doing a show about fracking next Tuesday. That'll be our 9 o'clock hour next Tuesday morning. So, Lori, you'll want to tune in for that because we're going to spend a whole hour talking about this natural gas extraction process called fracking. Okay, Maggie, go ahead.
Well, thank you, actually, John, and thank you, Lori. I have not seen that 60-minute piece. I wish I had. I've been traveling a lot, but I've heard a lot about it. I do have a few things to say. One is that natural gas has been seen as the bridge towards a clean energy economy. As you shift from fossil fuels to a range of alternative energy approaches to fuel our society, natural gas has been called the bridge fuel. And in that, there is a big emphasis on the fact that while there were limitless amounts of gas, this new technology emerged that would go much, much deeper into the earth, cut through the shale, which you will learn a lot more about next week, and I won't pretend anyway to be an expert about this. And the process for doing that is called fracking, as you know, and it's a drilling process that includes the use of large amounts of water and chemicals. It has been declared to be, by many companies, as being perfectly fine, not a problem, et cetera. As its use has expanded rather dramatically since the discovery of the opportunity to get deeper into the earth and find gas, which is yet another fossil fuel, the look, first the impacts, and looking at fracking and taking a hard look at it is, I think, well overdue. I'm very grateful that that 60 Minutes piece was done. I'm so glad to hear you're going to do this, John. It's part of the choices that we have to make about our lives and where we get energy that we use, which we do in the United States. We use a lot of energy. The attention that's going to fracking is very important. It is, I think there are a number of companies that are talking about having fracking fluids, meaning the chemicals that are green, that are not harmful, but I have yet to get my hands on whether or not that I think that technology really exists and can be used by the vast majority of companies. So the first and most important thing is we're paying attention. The second is that it's getting the scrutiny it needs. To your point about regulations, this is one of the problems. Fracking was exempted from the Clean Water Act in the last administration, and there are a number of states where there is a patchwork quilt of regulations around the country. Different states have different rules, and some states have almost no rules. That's led to the kind of problems that showed up in that 60 Minutes piece, and there are going to be more of those stories being told. So I think the focus on fracking is more than appropriate. The second is because natural gas has been seen as a bridge fuel because it was, the common phrase is it had, quote, half the carbon footprint of more traditional fuels like coal and oil. As you look at fracking and the release of methane gases and other things, we have to also find out if, in fact, natural gas, even if it's done safely, really does half the footprint of the more traditional carbon fuel. So it's not just fracking to look at, it's also the carbon footprint of gas that we need to look at. And if we're going to give our attention to a 21st century energy economy, how much of it should be gas? And if it is, how safe should it be? And the real thing to look at in that instance is not just fracking, but also the entire process of extracting gas and delivering it to the locations where it's used.
We're talking with Maggie Fox, who is president and CEO of the Climate Reality Project. We have lots of callers who want to get in. We'll try and get all those calls in. Got a really good email here I also want to share. Lots to talk about and not as much time to do it ever as we would like. Just a reminder, we will cover fracking next Tuesday morning during the 9 o'clock segment of the Kathleen Dunn Show. So if that's a topic you're interested in, you'll want to tune in on Tuesday morning at 9. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and have more of our conversation with Maggie Fox and with you. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:43. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next hour, I'll be joined by a biographer to discuss the life of landscape architect, journalist, abolitionist, and very interesting fellow, Frederick Olmsted. He designed, among other things, the Capitol grounds in our nation's capital and Central Park in New York City. Should be an interesting hour. Next hour here on the Kathleen Dunn Program. This hour, we're talking about climate change. Some would even go so far as to say climate crisis, with Maggie Fox, who's the president and CEO of the Climate Reality Project. And I said we had an email. I want to read this, and then we can go back to the phones. But here's an email from Rod, who says, David Sanborn Scott, Canada's hydrogen proponent, labels our current climate destabilization as terminal geopathology. The pathogen is CO2. The July 2011 issue of Scientific American identifies current warming rate of increase as already equal to and far more abrupt than the previous most extreme warm-up in the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum. Well, I'm happy I just got those words out. Maggie, you want to comment on that?
Well, I think you just did. That was
okay.
Actually, I was impressed that you. First of all, there is, in as you mentioned much earlier in the call, the march of geologic time, there have been periods where change, this rate of change has occurred. It wasn't when there were human beings on the planet. So I think one of the things facing us right now is not just a changing climate and a changing Earth, but what will happen to human beings and other species in that process. That's what we are trying to get on the front side of. We've been dumping 90 million tons of carbon dioxide pollution into the atmosphere for a long time. It has changed what the planets we live on, and we have to stop doing that in a way that so we can get a handle on it and make a difference.
Let's go back to the phones. We'll go next to Richland Center, and Mark joins us. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. I appreciate this conversation, and I appreciate the language that keeps being brought up, saying the 21st century, because we really have to stop using a 17th century idea about money and a 17th century monetary system in order to be able to recognize that virtually everything that we want to do here is plenty easily paid for if we would use a different monetary system. The idea of money is simply that once people have decided to work at various things, they need a tool in the right amount in order to exchange those things that they do. So we ourselves are the money, and yet we're using a system that limits the amount and is controlling the amount by a private entity, and therefore we're telling ourselves we don't have the money to do this and we don't have the money to do that and we owe that guy the interest, we owe this. It's an asinine way of looking at what otherwise is human endeavor that could easily, easily pay for everything that needs to be done next.
Well, Maggie, Mark says it's the financial system.
Well, I think I do think the emphasis on human endeavor as the currency of change is right on. It is our use of resources that is causing this change, and it is the change in how we move forward that will make that difference. I don't know if I've ever thought of it in the currency sense before. But to the extent that human endeavor is what it will take to make this shift, I absolutely agree with you about that.
Well, I want to go back to, because that relates to what you just said, relates to our previous caller who wanted to, who was talking about fracking. You know, we can say, well, you know, they shouldn't be doing that, and we shouldn't be, you know, blowing the tops off of mountains to make, to dig coal, and we shouldn't be doing this and shouldn't be doing that. But each one of us is responsible for that in a way, because we are using a tremendous amount of resources, electricity, and being perhaps the biggest one, and the fuel to operate our cars and jet airplanes and whatever else we have. I mean, my goodness, I'm sitting in a studio right now. I've got three computer monitors in front of me, all with different information on them, which is important for me to have to do this program. But each one of them is drawing a lot of electricity. And we have and then you multiply me by the number of people we have on the planet. And it, you know, it's easy for us to say, well, there's the villain. Let's go get that person. But we all have to take some ownership of the situation that we're in, don't we?
Yes, we do. And I think, I hope that that is the message that we will be getting across with the Climate Reality Project. It's not, yes, there are fossil fuel interests that are denying the existence of climate. To the extent that they are doing that and misrepresenting the truth, then that is, it is reasonable and right to point that out, because it prevents us from coming together collectively to face and solve these very questions that you've asked, which is our energy use. But it is our problem, and it is ours to solve, and it is only together that we're going to be able to do that. If we, the point about pointing out to others is when the others are misrepresenting the truth so that it prevents us from coming together. That would be the only reason. Otherwise, you're absolutely right. We together, we're doing this. It's our choices, and we actually have to make different choices. But we first have to explore the reality of the climate crisis together before we can get on the other side of making those changes. The changes
I was thinking
that
you
know and I know we need to make.
I was thinking of the, I was thinking of that old Pogo quote, an old comic strip that is no longer with us. We have met the enemy, and he is us.
Or we've met the opportunity and we are it.
There we go. Okay, that's the positive way to spin that. Thank you very much. Let's go to Jeff in Milwaukee next. Jeff, good morning. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi. I don't think we're going to get a handle on this whole problem, this environmental problem, until we hold politicians and business people's bad decisions seriously responsible with real consequences, maybe reparations to society, for real bad environmental inaction. A prime example would be violating antitrust laws and restraint of trade with oil corporations, and Reagan's removing solar panels from the White House, and politicians voting against better CAFE mileage standards. We have to approach all of this to get a better handle on it.
Well, you know, we took a hard look at the Truth campaign around cigarette smoking, which is one of the most successful social campaigns in the history of the United States, where, you know, we were telling young people not to smoke, it's bad for their health, and it really wasn't making much difference. In fact, it became almost an important act of rebellion to do the opposite. Litigation was an important part of that Truth campaign, in the sense that it was revealed through discovery that companies knew for a real long time exactly what the impacts of cigarette smoking were on the health of those individuals who were smoking. There have been a number of litigation strategies, none of which have reached the scale that you are discussing or raising here, about what it is that the fossil fuel industry does know and has known for a long time about the impacts of carbon pollution, both on human health and on the health of our planet. And I assume going forward there may be those kinds of, it's not clear. But because the shifts in our weather are occurring so much more rapidly than even scientists predicted a number of years ago, it feels important to bring people together and recognize these shifts, while at the same time exploring a lot of other avenues for how to make this change happen. Litigation may well be one of them.
J. Jeff, thanks for the call. Here's an email from Jeannie who says, Maggie, I completely agree with you that change regarding the will to move to sustainability and belief in climate change in the United States will come from the common people, the bottom up. We the people will help shift the political climate. I believe that is the only way to make significant change. We truly need to speak with others, bring this up to friends and family, and talk about it, educate ourselves, and demand change from politicians.
Well, I certainly do agree with that. I think one of the more important lessons of the Truth Campaign is when we are talking to people in our lives, whether they're our coworkers, our friends, our neighbors, our family, people at various meetings that we attend or opportunities in our lives, one good way to do that is to ask questions. What do you think about the weather changes that are happening? Have you experienced it? What's happened? What about your family? It does open the conversation in a different way because it's very clear that we're not all headed in the same direction on this yet. And we need to be in order to get to the scale, the pace and scale of solutions that are so necessary to solving this. So I appreciate your email very much. I think you're right, and one small suggestion I might make is to ask questions.
All right. Well, I try to ask questions every time I'm on the air. Well, thank you. Let's go to Herb in Chicago and find out what his question is. Herb, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Herb.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Herb.
Yes. I would like to offer a positive suggestion on how to eliminate 9 million people from burning oil and supply solar power and geothermal to create zero cost for energy homes. We have a patent that is the only one that has ever been issued for development of solar panels on rooftops that track the sun. And if you keep the panels focused every minute of every day on a rooftop, you increase the output of the panel by 30% to 40%. I have written to the president 17 times. We can create 1 million jobs by creating affordable homes with absolutely no cost for gas, electricity, fuel oil, or propane. And I would like to find out how we might get this in front of some source to develop this patent that was given to me and the Northern Illinois University.
Well, certainly you could send me an email, and I'll see. I don't know exactly if I'm the best person to help you with this, but I will certainly give it a try. It goes
well, this would be an example of the kind of innovation that you were talking about that is going to be necessary going forward. We need to find some different ways to do things. Herb certainly seems to have an idea that seems to be on the right track.
Well, and it's back to that human endeavor, the currency of human endeavor. It's very exciting to get on the phone and hear about people stepping forward. They're not just talking about it. They're actually trying to solve it. So thank you for what you've done, Herb, and I'll see what I can do.
Boy, we're already down to like the last minute and a half of the program here, and we still have full phone lines. That suggests to me that we probably should revisit this topic. As we conclude here, I'd like you to go through again what's going to happen on September 14th and what you hope to accomplish with that.
Thank you, John. On September 14th and 15th, starting at 7 o'clock in Mexico City, we are bringing together a globally live-streamed event, 24 hours of reality. You can join on our website, climaterealityproject.org. Come join us and participate in 24 hours of reality. Share that link with your friends, your neighbors, your workers, the people who you think might be interested or curious, who have questions or stories to sell themselves. It will be a multimedia presentation created by Vice President Gore, focusing on extreme weather events that have occurred all around the world in just the last year and a half, and what that trend shows us, and it gives people an opportunity to join up. And what we're saying is, come and join the Reality Corps, come together in this conversation, and link arms around the world with others, so that we can create and build that political will for change to reach the scale and scope of the solutions that we know Herb and many other people around the world are working to give us.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. By the way, there is a link to climaterealityproject.org on the Kathleen Dunn Facebook show page, and you can find it there. If you can't remember climaterealityproject.org, I would find that useful because... Well, that's another show. Anyway, Maggie Fox, thank you for joining me this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much, John, and thank you for all the listeners and callers and emailers. Please join us on climaterealityproject.org, and we'll work together to help solve this exciting and scary challenge.
All right. Rhonda Fanning produced this hour of programming. Chrissy Pease handled on-air production. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. We're going to talk about landscape architecture, among other things, next hour. Stick around. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.